again and welcome to Musings on Golf, where great storytelling is the major reason we exist. I'm Kelly Elbin along with Bob Bubka. And Robert, that little play on words tells me and you and our audience, and indeed it's time for the second major championship of the year, the 105th PGA Championship at a very different looking Oak Hill Country Club in Rochester, New York.
Yeah, it's a big boy golf course, Kelly. And the one thing about golf, after the PGA Championship, literally we're halfway through. We only have four majors, and we'll have played two of them come next Monday. And we're going to get a good winner at Oak Hill. It's just an unbelievable golf course.
Andrew Green, who's become the hot designer, was brought in about 7 or 8 years ago. And they rebuilt all 18 greens. They rebuilt all the bunkers from the famed Donald Ross layout. The golf course opened in 1926. Ross was obviously the designer of his day. But golf courses over time, Bob, as you know, they change. They actually rebuilt three specific greens. They redid them. So when you look at 10 years ago when Jason Duffner won, he wanted a 10 under par. It's a very different looking golf course. They've taken a lot of trees out. It's going to play a lot firmer. I don't think you're going to see 10 under on a par 70 win this time.
Well, it all depends, obviously, on the weather, and it could be rather cool up there, and it's not conducive to low scoring. And I'm sure Oak Hill's going to put up a great defense, and I kind of agree with you. I think there's not a player in the field, Kelly, that wouldn't say right now, give me 10 under, and I won't tee it up.
Well, I had the chance to play. I've played twice now, the blue course at Congressional Country Club outside of Washington, where Andrew Green was the guy who they brought in there. And again, he removed a lot of trees, rebuilt pretty much every green complex, very similar to Oak Hill. It is a decidedly tougher, faster, harder golf course than Congressional's blue course ever had been. Seth Wall, who's the CEO of the PGA of America, is our guest today. And Seth has seen a lot in life. Former head of Deutsche Bank, was involved with the PGA Tour event, played up at the Bank of Boston, played in Boston, a TPC course there. Good friends with Jay Monahan. And he has a good pulse, I think, Bob, on what's going on with this championship and the PGA of America, in which he's now in his fifth year of leading.
Yeah, he was fascinating to talk to. Tremendous amount of knowledge. I know our listeners are going to enjoy that. There's no amateurs in this field. It's the only event that doesn't have amateurs. They're going to have 16 live players. That's going to add a little spice to what's going on. And, you know, it's almost like sit back and let it happen.
Young guy by the name of Braden Shattuck, a PGA professional out of Pennsylvania, is one of 20 of the club professionals who will be representing the PGA of America this week. And the goal, obviously, for all those guys, the dream is to just at least play the weekend. And I know the PGA is hoping to see a couple of those guys make the cut. It will be a tremendous challenge for them. We know one guy who has not only made the cut at a past PGA championship, but he's won it. And he won yesterday as we tape this on Monday, the 15th of May. A very emotional win for Jason Day, 5 years after his last triumph on the PGA Tour. Here's what he had to say.
You know, I just felt like it just had to press, and funny enough, you know, you have to shoot 9 under to try and, you know, to win a tournament, which is kind of crazy. It's nice to be able to, you know, finally do that and win one. After this week, yeah, I know that I can win. There's a few subtle things that I have to change technically to feel like I can actually come out and dominate and play very consistent golf. I feel like, you know, the swing is moving in the right direction to the point where I can just go at it as hard as I want. You know, as the competitor, you know, that I have inside me, I kept on visualizing myself in the winner's circle again, and it was nice to be able to sit here today and win out.
Yeah, big shout out to Chris Como, who's been working with Jason Day, actually refining his swing, Kelly, so that there's less strain on his back. Jason Day's been plagued with a iffy back for quite some while, and certainly a great winner for the Salesmanship Club in Dallas. They're one of the best organizations on the planet, and they got a bona fide blue chip winner in Jason Day.
No question, AT&T Byron Nelson is just a great golf tournament, as you said, giving back to the community in so many ways. And Bob, it is a process with guys, isn't it? Sometimes they have to overcome, you know, whatever it might be. Maybe it's a mental setback of some sort. But man, he has really had to deal with a lot of back issues over the last decade.
Yeah, he certainly has. And on top of that, he recently lost his mother to cancer.
Yeah.
She was a tremendous inspiration to Jason, working several jobs, moving to different locations, also that Jason would get his best opportunity to do what he's doing now, being a winner on the PGA Tour. I guess you got to keep an eye on Jason Day going into Oak Hill.
I don't think there's any question about that. Hey, by the way, you mentioned about weather. There will be some interesting temperatures. There'll be a high of 76 that's supposed to be on Friday, but also a low of 60 when they start, or a high of 60 when they start on Thursday, and some lows in the 40s. So a little cooler temperatures in Rochester than in the Dallas area where they're coming from. Hey, Bob, PGA Championship. I remember Jack Nicklaus a number of years ago talked about PGA Championship to him being about family. And there was a great picture of Jack holding one of his sons. I think it was Jack Jr. when he won the PGA at Canterbury outside of Cleveland in 1973. For me, personally, my dad being a past president of the PGA of America, PGA Championship was my summer vacation. So it was, you know, from 1970 in Tulsa, 1972 outside of Detroit. And that was where I actually met Lee Trevino for the first time. My dad and Lee, closest of friends. And then in 74, when Trevino won the PGA Championship at Tanglewood outside of Winston-Salem, he actually gave me his black sombrero hat that he that was on the, was on the cover of Sports Illustrated after he won that PGA Championship. He beat Jack by a shot down the stretch, and he was so nervous at the end. He typically, you know, a guy will mark and let the other players finish up, but he had about a foot and a half or whatever. He just said to Jack, "Please let me tap this in. I don't want to gag this." But a lot of great memories for me personally, the PGA Championship. How about for you? What's the PGA Championship represented to you, and any special memories that stand out?
Well, first, we got to go back to Lee Trevino. He just shared with me he played at Insperity last week, and I asked him about that black hat he gave you, and he said, you know, he had a white hat and he had a black hat, and he agonized on what color I'm going to give Kelly Elbin. And that black hat came out. So
I think I got the cooler one.
It wasn't without thinking that Lee Trevino gave you that hat. As far as memories, the memory I have, I've been trying to eradicate for years. I can't even tell you where it took place. But Arnold Palmer was completing his last PGA Championship, and I distinctly remember him leaving the 18th green, going to the clubhouse, and not one reporter wanted any comments from Arnold Palmer.
The PGA Championship on Tuesday night of the week of the championship has a past champions dinner, no different than the Masters has had. I contend that had Arnold just won the PGA Championship once, that dinner, year after year, would have taken on even greater importance from a media standpoint, from a following. But yet, it was the one that eluded him. Boy, he would have loved to have won it.
Oh, he certainly would. It's hard to imagine, you know, Sam Snead never won a U.S. Open. Arnold Palmer never winning a PGA. These are two players that dominated. I mean, dominated out there. And yet, they couldn't get it over the line in these two events. And Kelly, one other thing that strikes my fancy. Back in 91 and 92, the same caddy won the PGA Championship. However, he was on two different bags. 1991, he was on the bag of John Daly, Nick Price's regular caddy. Nick's wife was going to have a baby. Squeaky Medlin, who was a dear friend that lost a very early battle to cancer, was asked if he wanted to caddy for John Daly. He brings him home. The following year, Nick's back out there, and he wins. So Squeaky Medlin, winning caddy in 91, 92, two different players.
And Tom Watson, came so close, lost in a playoff in 78 to John Mahaffey and Jerry Pate at Oakmont for the PGA Championship. That was the one that he couldn't get. Trevino obviously couldn't win and didn't win the Masters. It just happens sometimes with great players. So before we get to Seth Waugh, CEO of the PGA of America, Bob, let's give our picks. I'll go with two, and obviously John Rahm is the obvious choice, but I'm going to move away from him with my two picks, one of whom is Dustin Johnson. He won the LIV event in Tulsa. I think the golf course is set up perfectly for him. And the other one is Adam Scott. If you just look at the trend, the way he's played in the last few months, he should be a factor. As great a ball striker as he is, he's putting well. I totally expect Adam Scott to finish in the top five. I'd be surprised if he didn't.
Well, my two picks, not too dissimilar to yours. I got Brooks Koepka. Mm-hmm. He's won back-to-back PGA championships. He's a big golf course player, and I think he has the firepower to get it done at Oak Hill. And then I'm going to go with Patrick Cantlay. Joe LaCarver recently on the bag. Cantlay is steady, nothing flashy. He just keeps coming at you. Has yet to win his first major. It could be his time at Oak Hill.
Thank you, Bob. It is now time for a word from Titleist, and then we're going to hear from Seth Waugh, CEO of the PGA of America.
To outperform is to be better. This begins with trusting a golf ball you know will outperform every other. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to deliver longer distance, lower long game spin, more consistent flight, and unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Kelly Elbin along with Bob Bupka. And Bob, it's the week of the 105th PGA Championship at Oak Hill Country Club outside of Rochester, New York. And there's no one better to talk about the second major championship of the year and all that's going on with the PGA of America than their CEO, Seth Waugh. Welcome to Musings on Golf.
Thanks, guys. Nice to see you, Bob and Kelly, and appreciate it. It's number two on the calendar, but number one in your hearts, right?
Absolutely.
Well, Seth, I want to begin by informing you. I was talking to you off air about your first name. There's a couple of initials that have been added to Seth Waugh, and in my book, you're now R.I. Seth Waugh, because I'm hearing too much about AI, which is artificial intelligence, and Seth Waugh is real intelligence. So we're going to get some good stuff on the PGA Championship here in Rochester. It's the fourth time, Seth, but I believe the course the players are going to see this week is completely different from what they saw 10 years ago.
Yeah, it is very different. We've gotten great reviews kind of across the board. Players that have at the highest level, but also the recreational ones. The fans are going to have a lot better views because they're, it's not, there's a lot less trees than there used to be. But it's a great test of golf, a proper golf course with an enormous history. And Rochester is just such a wonderful town and loves its game, loves the game. They've been waiting a long time to bring us back, and we couldn't be more excited about it. The city's really gotten behind it, and in every way, we love going to these kind of mid-sized cities because the entire town. In bigger cities, you might end up being sort of a traffic jam, but in the smaller towns, you're family, and it's we feel that way this week. We've had a great relationship with Oak Hill for a long time, and just so happy to be back excited about it.
We're talking with Seth Waugh, head of the PGA of America. Is there a different approach on how the PGA of America sets up the PGA Championship that may differ from the other three majors?
Yeah, we hire Kerry Haig and let him do his magic.
Good move.
Yeah, I call him the course whisperer because he somehow manages to turn, you know, the back nine on Sunday into the back nine of Augusta, not literally, but in terms of the theater that he creates, you know, every year. He's just a maestro. And, you know, he obviously looks at the weather and conditions and sets it up for birdies and bogeys and eagles and others, and just creates, you know, incredible leaderboards. We always find the best champion, and it's always exciting. And, you know, I'd also say, Bob, that we don't focus a lot on what the winning score is. A lot of people say, what is it? Well, you know, these guys are awfully good and getting better every second. And we kind of don't care what it is, as much as we want to crown the right champion and we want it to be exciting. We want to create, you know, the most possible, you know, sort of excitement for the fans. And that's really how we think about it. What's the course going to allow, given the, you know, conditions? We play in an outdoor sport, and, you know, Rochester this time of year can have four seasons in a day, and we'll see what Mother Nature brings. But it's it'll be, you know, I know what I don't know, and I know that that Kerry, I should stay out of Kerry's way, because he's just so incredible at what he does.
Seth Waugh, the CEO of the PGA of America, joining us on Musings on Golf. Seth, as you well know, the Masters, because of the legacy of Bob Jones as being the greatest amateur golfer of all time, prides itself on having a group of amateurs in the field every year. The PGA Championship, in much the same way, prides itself on having PGA club professionals in the field. You had a most exciting PGA Professional Championship earlier this month at Twin Warriors in New Mexico. A fellow by the name of Braden Shattuck from Glen Mills, Pennsylvania, won it, and now he's leading the 20 PGA professionals who comprise the Corebridge Financial PGA team at Oak Hill. Seth, I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about those 20 as representatives of the thousands of PGA professionals who work to grow the game every day.
Yeah, well, thanks for calling it out. And you know, we're so excited. We're so proud and so excited to have them there. It gives us a platform to talk about, you know, 1 week a year, we're obviously delivering the men's game at the absolute highest level in the game. And then, you know, the other 51 weeks, and including actually 52, including this week, because they're all out there working hard. You know, we have the boots on the ground, the sort of front line of the game, or 28,000 that are trying to make lives better every day through our beautiful game. And they're the ones that, you know, make you better, that, you know, run the clubs. You know, we are so excited about where the game is right now. It's never been in better shape. Participation levels are at all-time highs, and they're at all-time highs in every category. You know, it's true of juniors, it's true of first-timers, it's true of avids. There's so many different ways to consume the game now, whether, you know, on course and off course. And our professionals are very active in the off course stuff as well. And it's, you know, the really cool thing about the game now is how it's growing. The fastest growing cohorts at each one of those levels, whether it's beginners or avids, are women or girls and people of color. So we have intentionally really worked hard to be not just welcoming to everybody in the game, but invitational and creating access in different ways. We think the off-course activities and how many ways you can consume the game has certainly helped that. Great things like Full Swing that have gone on that have created new audiences. We think gaming is going to be a big part of it as well. And I'll give you the most encouraging stat I'm so excited about is which it shocks people every time they hear it, that the percentage of participants both on course and off course under the age of 35 is now 48%. So roughly half the game is under 35 years old. And I think, you know, if we'd asked that same question probably 5 years ago, it would have been 80% or so over the age of 50. And so you think about what's going on in the game and the future of it, which we all worried about, that the baby boomers were going to take the game with it. It's complete reversal. And the game is I think, for the first time in its history, is actually, you know, it's had ups and downs, but it's cool. And it's cool to watch. It's cool to participate. It's cool to be around. And I give so much credit to our 28,000 that are growing it, you know, every day, and out there doing it. And so these 20, they can play the game. You know, as you said, we had an incredible finish. You know, there was two right behind Braden who drained a 12 footer on 18. He just nipped Matt Cahill, who happens to be the head professional at Seminole, where I'm lucky enough to play, who made the same 12 footer about, 10 minutes before him, to win it. And, Braden's got an amazing story. And we can't wait to tell the story of the 20 during the course of the week, but really the story of the 28,000, because they're the tip of the spear and really, what it's all about. But these guys not only, you know, work full time, and change lives, but they can really play, and it's exciting to see how they're going to do this week.
You know, Seth, you bring up the club professionals, and I've been fortunate enough to have a couple of them as lifelong friends, and I don't think the average person realizes how difficult it is to be a club pro and how much they care about their players. I mean, they're there bright and early in the morning. They're there at nighttime closing down the pro shop. They cannot get enough credit bestowed upon them in my eyes.
Well, you're 100% right, Bob. And, they have servant hearts, right? And they're teachers. I grew up, my parents were both teachers, and they chose that path because they thought they could make, you know, the most difference in people's lives by doing it. And that's essentially what our folks are, right? They're not all teaching and coaching the game, but they're out there, you know, again, making lives better. You know, we've worked hard on the work-life balance aspect of things because particularly during COVID, when the game was swamped and continues to be, I shouldn't say just COVID, since the boom, our guys have been, as you say, 24/7, working, doubling the volumes with the same amount of resources, right, is a hard thing to do. And so we're working really hard on the recruiting front to bring more people in the front end because we think it's an amazing time to be in the game. So we're doing everything we can to make it attractive. We're proud to say that we've developed a deferred comp plan for our 28,000 that'll create an ability to create life savings over a career in a significant way. And that's been launched this year. And then just making, you know, creating awareness at all the facilities, whether they be clubs or public facilities, that our professionals need to have a life. They have wives and children and soccer games and all the things that everybody else has, and to make sure that, you know, there is a balance to their lives. It used to be that, you know, if you worked in a northern facility, you'd work for 8 or 9 months full out and then get 2 or 3 months off. Well, now, given, you know, indoor facilities and the like, yeah, they're just as busy in February as they were in August. And so making sure that again, facilities are both rewarding our professionals, but also, hiring enough resources to let people, you know, have a bit more of a normal schedule is really important to us. And as you say, they do it because they love it, but we also want them to do it in a healthy and productive way and make it attractive for the next generation. So we've done a lot to try and make sure that, you know, create the awareness around that.
Seth, I'm glad you mentioned how busy the club pros are, because right after this week, the Wanamaker Trophy is going to be handed out at Oak Hill, and then your work for the month only half done. Next week, we have the KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship. Boy, a lot on your plate.
Yeah, it's a marathon, but it's a sprint of a marathon. And then we roll into the KPMG, women's tournament a couple weeks later. And by the way, we're just finishing up. We just finished up last week, I should say, two events. We had our PGA Works Collegiate Championship, which is essentially the HBCU National Championship, which we've run for 36 years. It's an incredible event. It's at Shoal Creek, this year, which is a great kind of story of coming full circle from the controversy of 1990 around our PGA Championship and the integration of the club to today, where they're embracing and helping us endow HBCU scholarships going forward, and we're trying to raise an endowment to do that for those golf programs. We also had our first adaptive open down at Port St. Lucie last week, which is really exciting, amazing to see those athletes perform given their disabilities. Just really cool stuff going on. Obviously this week, and then as you say, Bob, next week we're in Frisco, our home, and it's really the coming out party for the entire campus. We're playing it on the championship course, the East Course, at Fields Ranch at PGA Frisco, which is a Gil Hands designed, amazing golf course. The early reviews from some of the seniors that have come out to see it are off the charts. It's a big boy golf course, and we're going to hold every major we have over the course of the next decade or so. So really exciting to show that off to the world. And it's a busy time. And as you say, before last week, we had the PPC at Twin Warriors. So it is a full out sprint for us from pretty much, kind of call it May 1st to about July 1st is a lot of suitcases and a lot of hotel rooms.
Seth Wall, the CEO of the PGA of America, joining us on Musings on Golf. Seth, you mentioned PGA Works, and having been associated with the PGA of America for a long time, I certainly can appreciate all the charitable endeavors that the national organization has put together, as well as what's done by its members and associates at the out the grassroots level. Talk a bit about PGA Reach, of which I believe PGA Works is part of. It's really trying to touch a lot of lives through the game, isn't it?
Yeah, we're really proud of it. I was lucky enough to run a large bank before this, and one of the great benefits of that is the foundation that we had and the great work that we were able to do at Deutsche Bank around that. And it's some of the most fulfilling stuff that you do. I mean, it's part of a day job, but it's sort of a night job that is very fulfilling. And at PGA Reach, we have four pillars. We have our PGA Hope, which is helping our Patriots everywhere, which is our veteran programs. We actually get VA support for, because we're considered a therapy, because we're actually saving lives there, and our professionals get trained in how to deal with veterans and adaptive golf, and are out there. In fact, on Monday of this week, we have this what we call the Secretary's Cup, which is a number of veterans come around from around the country and play an event on Monday, which is really cool. We have PGA Works, which you mentioned, which is our effort to be inclusive, diversify and be inclusive in the game. How do we and we run a number of programs all the time, internships, education programs, a program called Beyond the Green, which we also run this week, which is trying to introduce kids at risk to the game. For the first time ever, we bring them out on to the course and introduce them to the game and talk about the careers that are in the game. You know, it's over $100 billion industry with, you know, a couple million jobs, and it's not, you don't have to just be a PGA professional to be in it. You can work in an equipment company or be in a finance job or an HR job or all sorts of things. And so we're always trying to educate on that front. We have our junior programs through Junior League, which is trying to make sure, you know, Junior League is among the coolest things in the game. We have 75,000 kids that are playing it every day. It's kind of Little League baseball for golf, and boys and girls, and it's age 8 to 14, and you know, it's really cool stuff with a national championship at the end, which is broadcast by ESPN. And we're trying to have every kid who wants to play in that have the ability to do it through funding scholarships through Reach. And then finally, what we call a place to play, which is trying to restore community golf, municipal golf, public golf in places that need it. You know, if we create all these golfers and there's nowhere to play, it's not going to do us much good. And so a lot of these public facilities struggle with underfunding and perhaps mismanagement, and we're in there trying to help prop them up. We've done a lot of good things on that front. And the other thing that we're doing this week is we try to leave a legacy everywhere we go. And so we donate, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to local community to help restore, either create an urban golf park, or help restore, one of their public facilities, which is what we're doing in Rochester this week. So it's you know, we're very active. We're very proud of it. We're on our first campaign ever to endow that. We're about halfway to $100 million goal, and those four pillars, have had great participation. We have an amazing board of trustees that help us oversee it and also help us on the fundraising side. And I'm really proud of it. And I think we're really, you know, making a difference in the world as well as in the game.
Well, we're very proud to have Seth Waugh, CEO of the PGA of America, as our special guest. What do you see the future of the golf ball? Where's it going, Seth?
It's a great question. You know, I think, look, it's a hard question, right, Bob? And it's been, you know, Jack's been talking about it for decades. And I think if you polled our 28,000, you'd obviously get very different, or any golfers, you'd get a lot of different responses. We believe that, you know, the game, as we've talked about, has never been in better shape. It's on an absolute tear. We don't think it's time on a recreational basis to suddenly now make it more difficult and perhaps less fun, right? So we're very glad that the governing bodies have backed off on altering it on the recreational side. And so now it's down to whether, you know, you have a local rule, at the elite level. We will work with the governing bodies and everybody else in the game. This is not going to be a food fight. It'll be, continue to be a good conversation about it. And I think we can come to a place where everybody is comfortable that, you know, we're not disrupting the game unnecessarily at a time when it's never been in better shape, both participation wise and as well as on TV, if you will. I think, you know, we're not a huge fan of bifurcation. We don't like it because we think, first of all, there's something inherent about the game that we can all compare ourselves to the best in the world, and that's, you know, fundamental to it. That when we go play in a pro-am, we're playing the same equipment. We might be playing different tees, but we can sort of marvel at how far they hit their drive or their seven iron relative to us. And I think that's, you know, a good thing. We also worry about where it stops and starts. Where is the elite game? You know, if a junior club championship is hitting it farther than a regular championship, does that mean they should play an elite ball? And then our 28,000 have to police all that, right? And how do you do all that? And so we hope there's an answer in here that protects the golf courses that need to be protected, that we don't kind of allow trees to grow to the sky, but without disrupting certainly the recreational game, and not going down a bifurcation route, which we think is complicated and ultimately not, you know, how we think about the game. So we're going to engage. We already have, obviously, and there are partners in the game, the USGA, the RNA, the tour, et cetera, are all our partners, and we're going to continue to have conversations and try to sort through, what's in the best interest of the game. And that's how, you know, the PGA of America, there's a lot of bodies in our game. It's somewhat confusing. I don't think you'd set it up the way that it is if we started today. But there are partners, and each one of us, the other bodies, if you will, have kind of one of the swimming lanes in the pool. We kind of have the whole pool, right? We have, from the first shot you hit to the last shot you hit, we have Junior League to the Ryder Cup. And so when we think about the game, we think about what's in the best interest of the game. That's our true north. And we'll always act in that way. And that's how we'll approach this issue as well.
Seth, final question from me. And you mentioned the Ryder Cup, and goodness sakes, with so much having changed in professional golf since the U.S. dominated the Europeans at Whistling Straits in the fall of 2021, I wonder if you could give golf fans a sense of what they should expect to see this fall when the Ryder Cup is played outside of Rome for the first time.
Yeah, well, you're going to see great golf in a really interesting town. If you can get there in person, I know we're going to eat and drink well too.
but I hope so.
Yeah.
Count me in.
Yeah, exactly. You're good at those two things, Bob. we haven't won on European soil since, I think, 1993, maybe. I might be screwing up.
93.
Yeah. And so we're bound and determined to change that. You know, I mean, obviously we had a tour de force in Whistling Straits, looked kind of unbeatable, looked like the UCLA Bruins under John Wooden, right? We're never going to lose again. But, you know, golf is a fickle thing. It changes very quickly. We obviously have an incredible group of great young players, but so does Europe. And that's why you play the game. And I know Zach is going to be an amazing captain, as is Luke, by the way. They are both such class acts. And they're both going to have great teams. And Zach is, I said to Zach, anybody can win a home game, cap, you know, how about winning on the road? And he's excited about that challenge. I certainly hope we win. But I hope it's a really close match. And again, I hope it comes down to the last putt on the last day.
Well, we thank you, Seth. At the top of the interview, I referred to you as R.I. Seth Waugh. I got to make R.I. in capitals based on the education you gave us over the past few minutes. You're a good friend and a great CEO. And for Kelly, this is Bob Bupka saying thank you for joining Musings on Golf.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
People like Seth Waugh, they have the big vision. They can certainly see things on a larger scale. I think the PGA of America is in great hands with him, and we're going to have a terrific championship this week.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Seth Waugh, he's a very talented player in his own right, loves the game of golf, and he even loves, probably even more than playing golf, he loves the job that his 28,000-plus PGA pros do for the game of golf. They are the PGA of America, the club pros, and Seth takes every opportunity to make that fact known.
He sure does. We thank Seth Waugh for his time and terrific insights. Next week, as we celebrate Military Appreciation Month and Patriot Golf Days over the Memorial Day weekend, we're going to be joined by a very special guest, Rocky Sickman. At the time, he was a young Marine. When the Iranian embassy was overrun, he was held hostage for 444 days during the Iranian hostage crisis. He then went to work for Anheuser-Busch for 30 years, has gotten involved with Folds of Honor, plays in a number of golf events, good player, and he's going to tell us all about what they're doing through Folds of Honor and Patriot Golf Days to further enrich the lives of so many who need that. Really going to look forward to hearing from him, Bob.
Yeah, he's going to be a very, very special guest. Our listeners not going to want to miss that one.
Rocky Sickman next week on Musings on Golf. For Bob Bupka, Kelly Albin signing off. Enjoy the PGA Championship, the second major of the 2023 golf season.